The show is live and local. It's your connection to local performances and other local events. In the case of the latter sort, there is on Thursday afternoon the Center for Advanced Study at the University of Illinois MillerCom lecture being given by Francesca Zambello. She is Artistic and General Director of the Glimmerglass Opera Festival in, actually I think they're calling it Glimmerglass Festival, in Cooperstown, New York. That's at 4 o'clock. She's an internationally recognized director of opera and theater, and currently working at the Lyric Opera in Chicago on the upcoming production of the American musical Showboat. So that sort of implies at least part of her answer to what is American opera today. We'll be talking with her later on the program. First up is the Canadian fiddler, singer, songwriter, and step dancer, April Virch. She is going to be at the Independent Media Center in downtown Urbana, a presentation of the Champaign-Urbana Folk and Roots Festival Thursday evening at 7:30. And she'll be my first guest right after this tune from her new CD. We just heard a tune called That's How We Run, which is also the title track from the latest CD by Canadian fiddler and singer April Virch. She is going to be a guest of the Champaign-Urbana Folk and Roots Festival on Thursday at the Independent Media Center. Show starts at 7:30, opens actually with Kate Fritz, who's a local Scottish-style fiddle player, and then April and her band coming in, and she's with me right now. Thanks very much for joining us on Live and Local.
My pleasure. Hi.
Have we caught you at home, or are you on tour somewhere?
No, we're on the road. I'm currently in Duluth, Minnesota. Our tour started a week ago, and we've started in Minnesota and Wisconsin, and today we're heading to Iowa.
So, and is this all a driving tour, I assume?
It is, yes. We usually fly into our first tour stop and then rent a minivan and then return it and fly to the next region kind of thing. So right now the van, we picked it up in Chicago because that's where the tour ends.
So the material that I have and actually that is on your website talks a lot about Canada. You're from Canada. And so I guess the obvious first question is, how much does that really figure in your sound?
So yes, I am from Canada. More specifically, I'm from a region that's called the Ottawa Valley in Ontario, and I was raised on that fiddle tradition. And what it is kind of a melting pot of influences. We have a lot of regional styles of fiddling in Canada and step dancing, and a lot of them are, well, all of them are strictly tied to the people that settled there, so whether it be Scottish or French in various parts of the country. And the Ottawa Valley style is more of a melting pot because people that came there to work in the lumber camps were Irish, Scottish, French, Polish, and German. And so it has a lot of different elements to the music. And I grew up with that, and so it's an interesting question how it ties into my sound now, because I play a lot of different styles of music. I certainly don't play all Ottawa Valley tunes in our show, but everything that I do kind of goes through that filter, and I try to keep that a big part of my sound. It's just very much who I am, and I love it. So definitely informs the style that I'm playing, no matter what it is.
And where in Canada is the Ottawa Valley?
The Ottawa Valley starts in the city of Ottawa, Canada's capital, in Ontario, and follows the Ottawa River to the tip of Algonquin Park. If you look on the map, it says Renfrew County. It's a fairly large county, and that's also the Ottawa Valley.
And how did you get your start in this whole business? I see here that it says you were a local star at the age of four.
All of the fiddle traditions at home are closely tied to some form of dance tradition as well, and in the Ottawa Valley that happens to be step dancing. And I had an older sister that was taking dance lessons when I came along. So I started dancing at the age of three. I wanted to do everything she did, and that led to a lot of performance opportunities. And so, yeah, I've been doing it as long as I can remember.
And you're still dancing in your shows?
Yeah, it's a big part of what I do. The two really go hand in hand for me, and a big part of the Ottawa Valley music is a driving rhythm that should make you want to get up and dance. So if it's not working on me, I know I'm doing something wrong.
As best as you can, describe step dancing versus other kinds. I'm not sure I quite have the picture, other kinds of country dancing.
Yeah, it's very difficult to explain it. It has a little bit of tap dancing. It has some clogging or Appalachian flat foot influence. It has French-Canadian step influence, even Irish hard shoe like you'd see in river dance, all kind of rolled into one. It's very intricate. I have taps on my shoes. And intricate and fairly high energy, lots of hopping and kicking and stuff. And unlike some of the other step dance styles, there's no emphasis on keeping your upper body straight. We can flail around and do what we like.
So the Irish dance that we have known because, you know, through river dance and so on, that is a form of step dancing?
Yes, that's the Irish hard shoe step dancing.
And I assume because you generally have the confines of, or at least frequently have the confines of relatively small stages, such as you'll have at the Independent Media Center here, you don't move very far in the process, in the course of it.
Well, actually, I do require a fair amount of space. So on small stages, we end up kind of standing and playing on the plywood. And when it's time to dance, everybody kind of moves aside. The minimum size that's comfortable is a 4x8 sheet of plywood, if that gives you an idea. And usually pretty much the whole thing gets traveled on.
Okay, that's good to know. Well, I've been at the Independent Media Center many times, and I'm trying to visualize it. I'd say you have at least that much space.
I think they've told me the same thing, so yeah. We're good to go.
Yeah. Since you mentioned the band, on this particular CD, you have quite a large roster of musicians. Who do you travel with, and who are you coming here with?
Well, I travel as a trio, and that's the core of the CD. We recorded in Asheville, North Carolina, and had a number of special guests join us just because we could. But it's easy for us to take the music from the CD to the stage because we planned it as our trio. So the instrumentation, I play fiddle and sing and step dance. And my bass player, Cody Walters, also plays some clawhammer banjo. And Isaac Callender plays guitar for the majority of the show, but he also plays mandolin and fiddle for a couple when I step dance.
And he doesn't actually seem to be on this CD.
No, he's a band member that worked with us a few years ago, and we've just welcomed him back to the band. He's going to be touring with us through May now, to Australia and back, and we're really excited about it. It's great to get to make music with talented people, but people that are also your friends. It really helps you connect a different way on stage.
Oh, I'm sure. And when are you headed to Australia?
We'll be headed there beginning of March till the end of April.
So long after the Australian Open, which is going on right now.
Oh, I wasn't following it, but yeah, well, I guess we'll miss that one.
Yeah, no, I didn't know if you would be headed there before that or not. Well, let's hear another tune. We're talking with April Virch, a fiddler and singer, who's going to be at the Independent Media Center in Urbana downtown Urbana on Thursday at 7:30 as a guest of the Champaign-Urbana Folk and Roots Festival. I should say a presentation of the Champaign-Urbana Folk and Roots Festival. And this is from her current CD called That's How We Run. How about this tune called, well, I love the title, and it's a traditional tune called Indian Ate a Woodchuck. Is there any particular meaning to that?
A lot of these old-time tunes have fantastic names like that, but some of them we know the exact meaning of, and some of them you can only speculate, which is true of this one. And I learned it from the playing of both John Hartford and also a great fiddler by the name of Reese Jones.
And it's April Virch and her companions here on Live and Local. The tune was called Indian Ate a Woodchuck, a traditional tune as played by April Virch on the fiddle and bandmates from her CD called That's How We Run. She and they will be at the Independent Media Center in Urbana Thursday night, and we're pleased to have her here on Live and Local. So you talked about, you know, how you got the dancing start following in the footsteps, kind of literally, of your sister. Mm-hmm. When did you pick up the fiddle? And was that following your sister also?
It wasn't. No, she doesn't play fiddle, but in a way it did, because what drew me to the fiddle was the dancing. That's the kind of music that we were learning to dance to, and that's whenever we performed. That's what we were around. We're fiddle players, and the local dancers and square dances, that kind of scene. And I just loved the sound of the instrument. And also, I think it had a lot to do with the social aspect of every time I was around the fiddle and the dancing, everybody was having a good time. You know, the people of the Ottawa Valley are hard workers, but when they get together and kick back, that's what's involved is the music. So I decided I wanted to play fiddle at the age of three, and my parents said, yeah, whatever, it's probably a phase and you'll get over it. So I had to bug them until I was six, and then I got a fiddle for my birthday.
And so how do they feel about it now?
I think they're pretty good with it. I always tease them and say, imagine if you got it for me 3 years earlier, how much better I could be by now. But, no, they've been huge support all along, and still, you know, having a daughter that's on the road 250 days a year isn't easy either, and they're pretty incredible people.
Does your sister, does she still perform in any way?
No, she doesn't. She's a dental hygienist. It was something that she enjoyed, but not anything she ever felt called to do full time.
I note here that you've won a couple of big fiddle championships there, and it says you're the first woman in history to do it. Does that simply imply that men have always done it before, that nobody's ever done them back to back?
I think the stats are that I was the first woman to win both.
Yeah.
So I don't know why. I mean, I think certainly now there's an equal number of men and women playing fiddle. It used to be years and years ago before my time that the championship classes were divided. There was a men's and a woman's. So that probably has something to do with it as well, but it's certainly changed. I'm not the only woman anymore either. It's there's a really, really healthy fiddle scene going on at home.
But you're still the only one who's won both of them.
No, I'm not. I was.
Oh, you're not anymore.
Nope, it changed last summer, which I was delighted about.
I'm glad you're delighted, because I was going to say, boy, now you have serious competition, huh?
No, and I don't compete anymore, so... It's just great to see people carrying on doing so well at the contest scene.
And you don't compete because you don't need to, or because you're too busy on the road, or both?
I'm too busy on the road for one, but also I make my living, you know, performing, and I think it's wise to turn professional and focus your energy. It's a different thing, and I just decided once I started touring full time that I wouldn't compete anymore.
I know that in the classical music world, winning a competition can be really helpful to launching a career. Is that also true in the world of traditional music?
I think it helps. It's one of those things that's difficult to measure and say exactly how much it launches a career, but definitely it adds some credibility that you didn't have before, that you've been putting your resume and mention to people when you're first trying to get booked at festivals. I think it helps. I don't think it's to the same degree, perhaps.
Wanted to hear another sample from your recording here, and this particular one opens with some nice vocal harmonies between you and I don't know which of the gentlemen in the band.
Both of them, yeah. Both of them do it now, and it's the trio singing the harmony there at the beginning.
And this tune is called "I'm Waiting to Hear You Call Me Darlin'." And this one has, to me anyway, a very country sound to it, sort of American country.
It's an old bluegrass standard, Flat and Scruggs song, actually. So, definitely more bluegrass country feel to it.
And it's April Virch from her CD called That's How We Run. She's going to be in Urbana on Thursday night, and we're talking to her here on Live and Local.
I'm waiting to hear you call me darling. I'm waiting to hear you call me dear. You know that I have always loved you.
That was a Lester Flatt and Chuck Johnson tune called I'm Waiting to Hear You Call Me Darlin' from Flatt and Scruggs. They would have performed that first, I guess. April Virch performed it here with her band on the CD called That's How We Run. And the Champaign-Urbana Folk and Roots Festival is presenting her on Thursday at the Independent Media Center in Urbana. She's my guest on Live and Local. I'm Kevin Kelly. And as I mentioned earlier, the Independent Media Center, relatively small space, although probably bigger than a lot of spaces. Do you play mostly smaller venues, or do you get to quite a variety of spaces?
Yeah, we definitely catch a variety, which I love because it keeps it fresh. There's a rush of a really big theater and crowd, and then there's something special about an intimate one. So I enjoy that aspect of it. And we're pretty lucky to play a big variety of venues and sizes.
When you know you're going to be in a large space, do you book some additional musicians to join you? Or does that depend that is?
No, we're always a trio. I think it's great. It doesn't necessarily take more people. We might look kind of small on stage, but it's a fairly big sound, and we're very we're tight because we do this a lot and travel together. So it would be hard to add someone into the mix easily and have it translate in the same way.
You know, as it happens, most of the tunes that I've chosen to play today are traditional tunes. We played the first one, That's How We Run, which of course is your own. Do you feel it all differently when you're playing your own music versus something traditional?
Not really. I think because most of what I write is based in traditional music, and I'm writing things that I hope sound as if they are, you know, as old as the traditional ones that I'm playing. That's kind of my aim in it. So I'm playing it with a similar groove and feel. That's an interesting question, but no, I'm always trying to get out of the way of the music and let the music work. And so it's a similar approach.
I know that some bands, when they're playing traditional music, I'm thinking of a couple of Irish bands where we've had on this show, where they specifically say that they really want to update the traditional tunes in some way, make them sound a little more modern. Do you have that in mind at all? Because just from listening to this CD, it sounds to me, it does sound indeed very traditional, but the one we're going to play in here just a second to close things out, called Old Sport, there's some bass work, for example, that strikes me as maybe something that's sort of updating. I don't know. How do you feel about those things?
I do. It's my goal, I guess, to keep the music sounding traditional in the sense that it's paying respect to the tradition that it came from. And as opposed to some bands that, like you say, are trying to make it sound a little bit more modern, I guess I wouldn't say modern. I would say I'm trying to bring something new to it and put some of myself into it. But I still want it to sound traditional. And I think there are good ways to do that. And like you said, sometimes it's the blending of the styles. So Cody's bass solo in Old Sport, for instance, is probably maybe a little bit more bluegrass sounding in an old-time tune. And so it's blending a couple of traditions instead of adding, you know, rock drums to an old-time tune, if you will.
Which some bands will do, too.
And I love that as well, but it's not where my heart lies. Nothing speaks to me more than kind of hitting that groove and that drive within the tradition. That's just my personal passion.
And I assume all these recreations of tunes are indeed cooperative creations between yourself and your trio mates.
Absolutely. And what's neat is that when you're working with people that come from various musical backgrounds, you can blend styles easier and inform each other as to what might work and how to do that in a way that if I was playing with all Ottawa Valley musicians, it wouldn't happen in quite the same way.
Well, April Virch, it's been a pleasure to talk to you and hear your music, and I think people will have a grand time hearing you at the Independent Media Center in downtown Urbana. The show is on Thursday at 7:30. It will open with Kate Fritz, who's a local Scottish-style fiddler, and April is from the Ottawa Valley in Canada, fiddler, singer, songwriter, and step dancer. She'll be represented in all of those capacities on Thursday, and it's really a pleasure to talk to you.
Thank you so much for having me on the show. I appreciate it.
We'll go out with this tune called Old Sport from April's CD called That's How We Run, Alive and Local. April Virch and colleagues from her CD, That's How We Run, and she'll be at the Independent Media Center in Urbana Thursday night. She was my guest here on Live and Local for this portion of the show. Supporting WYLL doesn't have to break the bank, and every gift counts. As a sustaining member, your continuous monthly gift of just $5 or $10 adds up to significant support over the membership year. Sustaining members, who are people just like you and me, provide a solid foundation that allows WYLL to offer our community a variety of programs. You'll find sustainer options when you contribute online at willpledge.org. We do have programming support today, in part from Krannert Center for the Performing Arts, welcoming the Moscow Festival Ballet January 24th, 25th, and 26th for enchanting performances of Swan Lake and The Sleeping Beauty. More information is available at krannertcenter.com. My guest on this portion of Live and Local is Francesca Zambello. She is the artistic and general director at the Glimmerglass Opera Festival in Cooperstown, New York, also artistic advisor to the Washington National Opera. She is going to be on the University of Illinois campus on Thursday to give a Millercom lecture at the Spurlock Museum entitled What is American Opera Today? She's also directing current production, or just about to be current production, at Lyric Opera in Chicago of the musical Showboat. We generally think of it as a musical, but that, I'm going to guess, is going to be part of your topic in the lecture, What is American Opera Today? First, thanks for joining us on Live and Local.
Very glad to be here, and yes, that is going to be part of my topic, is in a sense, what is American opera? And are musicals American opera? What have we taken from the European art form, and how have we made it our own in the last less than 100 years?
How do you address the notion of American musical theater in the realm of opera?
Well, I think that it was and is our own sense of opera in the way that opera was so popular in the 19th century. And in Europe, we, in a sense, have created a similar thing, which I think comes from our own European roots of storytelling through music. And we have evolved it into musicals, I think. Of course, that's not to say that they are similar in music content, but they definitely share a like place in terms of popularity among audiences. Opera will never achieve the popularity that it once knew abroad in this country. It never has, but I think it has its place, the same way that I think that musicals have their place.
How did you get your start directing? Did it come from a musical background at all?
I grew up in a family who, my mother is an actress and my father loved the theater, and so we went to the theater a lot, and we went to opera. And that I became interested in directing at an early age and thought that storytelling through music allowed one to be less naturalistic and to enable you to tell, in a sense, a bigger story, and also allowed you a certain visual freedom. And so I became more and more interested in opera and musicals, although in the beginning of my career I did a lot of both and have done both along the way, many more operas than musicals, but a fair amount, and some plays along the way as well.
Well, I was going to say, yeah, I saw that there are plenty of straight plays on your resume. Do you have any singing? I mean, have you done any singing yourself?
No, I took piano as a child and played the piano clumsily and a few other instruments. But basically, I have been involved in it much more from the visual side, although I am a musician, and that is important for being able to direct. You know, you need to know music. You need to be able to read music and communicate with singers and conductors and other musicians.
Do you treat, since you do some straight theater, do you treat the singing actor and the demands you place on the singing actor any differently than on the actor who doesn't sing, who may be a more skilled actor?
I think that, you know, they, of course, there are certain demands on all of them that are unique to what they're performing, but I generally try to approach it always from character and story. I mean, those are the things that unite us and the score or the script. You know, we only have the words and the music. So in some ways, I do treat it the same.
I guess I was thinking particularly that somebody who is primarily an actor is probably a better actor than the average operatic singer.
And well, I think that's unfair, actually. I think that in this generation of American opera singers, I think they have all grown up actually performing musicals and working hard on their dramatic skills. So, I mean, of course, that's not to say that they're all John Gielgud, but I do think that there is a much more of a desire for a higher level of acting and visual credibility and verisimilitude connected to the characters. We don't see you know, the fat lady sings and then it's over as much as we used to. We see it much, much less.
And it's interesting, too, that a lot of there are a number of former fat ladies now in opera who seem to be somehow addressing that issue as I'm not necessarily know why they're addressing that issue, but it seems to be fitting the change in operatic singing that you suggested.
Yeah, I mean, I think that the world, you know, the world of opera is in a revolution. You know, we are doing everything, I think, like every art form, to keep up and to find our ways to respect our legacy as well as being contemporary.
Which leads us to the notion of how do you approach an opera as a stage director? How do you decide whether to set it in a traditional way? How do you decide if
I'm always guided by what is the, you know, what is the story that I want to tell? What is the visual world that I want to set it in? How do I feel this story and these characters? I don't sit there and say, oh, let's set it in the 20th century. I always pick what is the emotional story I want to tell, and then often, you know, that informs you, and that brings you to a decision about how to set it, whether it's realistic or stylized or more suggestive, and what, again, I always just go back to the characters and the story they're telling, and that leads me to the visual language.
I'm looking at a review that's actually quoted on your website, and a quoting here from it, refers to you as being, quote, best known for psychologically probing interpretations of the operatic repertoire, unquote. You referred to emotional quality of the play. What's the difference between emotion and psychology? How do they come together? And then how does the psychology particularly show up on the stage as you see it?
Well, I think that, you know, music by its very nature allows us to probe internally the way that sometimes words don't, because it's often expressing an emotional characteristic or a psychological aspect of a character. It's telling us something, whether it's Wagner or Mozart or Handel. And so I seek ways of having the performer feel as if, you know, the music is coming from them, that they are creating that music and that they are expressing what that music, I think, is trying to say. I mean, I think that's why we keep revisiting so many pieces, is because we keep finding new ways to say things in it.
I mentioned at the beginning of this that you're directing the production of Showboat at the Lyric Opera, and that's actually involving one of our faculty members who has brought you here for this MillerCom lecture, Nathan Gunn. And it's he's gotten to be sort of a crossover artist in a way. He seems to be moving from opera in a little more into musical theater.
Well, I think he's like so many American opera singers, versatile in both milieus and has a facility to perform it. I think they require different skill sets to some degree, and he's got them, which he's a major artist, and I think perhaps people don't always realize when someone's in their backyard, but he is one of our greatest American opera singers working right now, as well as, I think, one of the great performers of American song and leader. And that, of course, also leads you in many ways to music theater, to songs of the 20th century written by composers as varied as, you know, from Gershwin to Chopin. I mean, he can do them. And so I think most singers hate that term crossover now, because we see it all as one world, the world of music and of theater blending together.
I'm thinking of a production of Showboat that I saw in Chicago once, which I think was probably quite traditional, and I'm trying to imagine what you're going to do with it at the Lyric.
Well, I mean, I wouldn't say, I mean, believe me, it's not set on a motorboat. I mean, it's definitely has a serious historic nod. I mean, the interesting thing about Showboat is the tapestry of American history from 1885 to 1920, and the fact that it's set on the Mississippi and then later in Chicago is just two crucial aspects of this country, and that it bridges when our country was in social revolution. And Showboat, in many ways, is the pivotal work that leads us from opera to musicals in this country. So I think it's appropriate to be doing this now and to be able to speak to everyone down there on Thursday about it.
It's Francesca Zambello who's going to be talking about what is American opera today, or rather asking the question and attempting to answer it in her way. It'll be Thursday at 4 o'clock in the Knight Auditorium at Spurlock Museum on the University of Illinois campus. And it's been my pleasure to have her on Live and Local. Thanks very much for joining us.
Thank you so much.
Nathan Gunn, as we mentioned, will be in Showboat at the Lyric Opera in Chicago. He'll be in the role of Gaylord Ravenel, which was a role sung by the late Jerry Hadley when he recorded it under the direction of conductor John McGlynn, back in the 80s, was it? Yeah, late 80s. Opposite in the role of Magnolia Hawks, Federica von Stade. Here are the two of them in a couple of segments from that recording of Jerome Kern's Showboat with book and lyrics by Oscar Hammerstein.
Who cares if my boat goes upstream, or if the gale bids me go with the river's flow?
From the musical Showboat, music by Jerome Kern, book and lyrics by Oscar Hammerstein II. That was a performance by Jerry Hadley in the role of Gaylord Ravenel and Federica von Stade in the role of Magnolia Hawks. And Gaylord Ravenel will be sung by Nathan Gunn, who is on faculty here at the University of Illinois. Coming up in the Lyric Opera of Chicago production, which begins February 12th, Magnolia Hawks will be sung by Ashley Brown. And it's directed by Francesca Zambello, excuse me, who will be presenting the Millercom 2012 lecture for the Center of Advanced Study at the University of Illinois Thursday afternoon at 4 o'clock. Her lecture entitled, What is American Opera Today? You're listening to Live and Local on FM 90.9. Here are some other events you can go see and hear live in our listening area over the next few days. Today is Tuesday the 17th. That means that tonight at 7 o'clock at the Iron Post in Urbana, it's the Parkland Early Jazz Ensemble. This evening at 5 o'clock at the Doubletree in Bloomington, it's singer-songwriter Denise LaGrassa. Tomorrow at the Great Impasta in Urbana, as happens every Wednesday evening at 6 o'clock, it's a jazz pianist Donnie Heitler holding forth. The traditional Irish music session happens weekly at Bentley's Pub in downtown Champaign, Wednesdays at 7 o'clock. Tomorrow evening at 7 at the Iron Post in Urbana, it's the University of Illinois jazz faculty performing starting at 7. Gruesome Playground Injuries is the current play by the Celebration Company at the Station Theater in Urbana. It runs Wednesday through Sunday at 8 o'clock, and I believe continues for another weekend after that as well. Might be wrong about that. Might be just this weekend, but check their website for complete details. The Hot Slugs are a blues, country, jazz kind of combination group. They're going to be playing at the Krannert Center on the Uncorked program Thursday evening at 5 o'clock. That's in Urbana on the U of I campus. University of Illinois Concert Jazz Band is at the Iron Post Thursday evening at 7 o'clock. Singer Glenn Campbell is at the Bloomington Center for the Performing Arts on his farewell tour Thursday evening at 7:30. There's a Festival of Spirituals and Songs for Martin Luther King Jr. at Evelyn Chapel on the Illinois Wesleyan University campus in Bloomington Thursday afternoon at 1 o'clock. And I'll be talking with the founder and director of that production, Karen Moham, who's a professor at Illinois Wesleyan, on tomorrow's Live and Local. The play Hauptmann is being put on by Community Players Theater in Bloomington. Thursday through Saturday at 7:30. Soochyung Park, as pianist, she's going to be giving a recital Thursday evening at 7:30 at Smith Memorial Hall. That's on the University of Illinois campus in Urbana. Diversity presents jazz at Lock, Stock, and Barrel in Decatur Thursday afternoon at 4 o'clock. Also in Decatur, Thursday evening at 7 at the Decatur Club, it's Road to Memphis, a send-off concert blues program that is on Thursday. And looking ahead to Friday, the Feudin Hillbillies are at Crewson's 2 in Peoria, Friday at 10 o'clock. The Royal Philharmonic Orchestra with pianist Jean-Yves Thibaudet are at the Krannert Center in Urbana, Friday at 7:30, and also a concert at on Saturday at 7:30. Kings Highway play the blues at Winner's Lounge in Bloomington. That's Friday night at 8:30. Dan Hubbard is at the Tilted Kilt in Peoria, Friday evening at 7 o'clock. The Springfield Theater Center presents chess at the Hoagland Center for the Arts in Springfield, Friday and Saturday night at 8 o'clock, with a Sunday matinee at 2 o'clock. The Greater Decatur Chorale gives its winter concert Friday evening at 7:30 at the Decatur Civic Center. And the Illinois Chamber Orchestra performs Friday evening at 7:30 at Second Presbyterian Church in Bloomington, and Saturday night at 7:30 at Second Presbyterian. That's not right. We'll have to correct that calendar listing. You're listening to 90.9 WYNL FM and HD Urbana with translators W266 AF Urbana and W293 AF Danville. We have support from the Corkscrew Wine Emporium, 203 North Vine, Urbana, with wines, beers, and spirits for the serious collector to the first-time buyer. Wine tastings are held on Saturdays from 3 to 6:30 p.m. in the Bouvon Wine Bar. More information at thecorkscrew.com.